Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
One minute until showtime.
And welcome back to another edition of Leaving Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Good to be back, man. Actually, it's good to have my voice back. It's still a little graspy. I haven't fully recovered. I've had this nasty cold for like a month. It's like going on to a month already, I think. And it was just slowly but surely like creeping up on me. And then the last segment that we did, which was like 2 weeks ago, that was it. After I got off the air, I could feel it. I mean, it was just throbbing. The next day, dude, I had no voice. So it was kind of impossible for me to get back on the air. We wanted to do the Rios and Chavez, replay and kind of analyze each and every single round, but when it came down to it on Tuesday, I mean, I had nothing. You know, I could barely, you know, I'm probably give 15, 20 minutes of commentary, and then that was it. I was kind of spent. So had to take a break, not by choice, because, the vocal cords weren't there for me to talk boxing here on Leave the Ring Radio. But we're back, and we're here to talk some boxing. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and you can talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. That's all we talk about. Don't bring up any other sport or any other subject, please, because we will hang up on you. Anyways, don't forget to download the app to your iPhone and your Android. Let's talk some boxing here. Look, last week, and it will get, honestly, I want to kind of play catch up here. Because, you know, the Diego Chavez and the Brandon Rios, we didn't have a chance to talk about it. I'm pretty sure you guys heard the discussion between Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim on the next round. But you didn't hear my take or our discussion between me and Gable here on Leaving the Ring. But before we even get into that, Danny Garcia just fought this past Saturday. And, you know, pretty much everybody that was on that undercard, it was really, did we kind of expect anything different? I mean, we were kind of hoping. You always kind of hope that a card that you're kind of bagging on is actually going to hold some water and it's going to make us go like, damn. Like the time when Eric Morales for the very first fight got in with Danny Garcia, we were like, no, it's not a good matchup. And it ended up turning out being a very decent fight. But this time around, Gabriel, it just didn't pan out for anybody out there. You know, Danny Jacobs is still doing his big thing. He's still trying to make his comeback. He's got a great opportunity of going after the middleweight title with Peter Quillen. But again, the way I looked at it, and I tweeted this out, I said, Danny's doing great until he meets a puncher or he meets a guy that can actually box back. Golden Boy, to me, in my opinion, and I may be way off on this, but I don't think I am, but I just have a really strange feeling that they haven't learned their lesson. And really, it's not Golden Boy. It's not Eric Gomez. This is Al Haymon, okay? Because I think it's fair to say right now that Golden Boy's matchmakers really don't do a lot of the matchmaking when it comes to an Al Haymon card. You know, and I've spoken to a few of these Golden Boy guys. Right. So, it really, the whose hands are in the cookie jar for any of the Al Haymon cards is really Al Haymon and the Watson. So, they make these decisions. They make these picks of who's going to get in the ring. And then you end up getting the crumbs of something that could have been pretty juicy. So, that's when we end up having this stuff.
I wouldn't put the Watsons in that conversation, or Sam, to be honest. That's not what Sam does. He's not a talent scout. He's a personal manager, I think. You know, he kind of handles all those other stuff, tickets and all the fighters kind of on a one-on-one basis. There's another guy, I'll leave his
name
off
was more
the record for now.
To me, honestly, and this is no jab at him or, you know, no disrespect to him, but to me, he's the pageant girl. He's the one that has all the smiles and the wave, and he's like, hey, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's a spokesperson, and he's giving lines to say what people want to hear. That's what he is to me.
Yeah, I mean, Sam's the face. Sam's, you know, as much of a face as Al is going to allow. And even Sam is kind of very protective within what he says. He always kind of has a positive face. No matter what I'd write, when I was pretty active on the beat, and particularly when I'd see him a lot at fights, and was one of those guys that was talking about Al Haymon quite often, one of the few before it became part of the lexicon. And Sam would just always be like, hey, man, keep writing. You know, just keep doing your thing. Like, there was never any sort of backlash or anything. You know, it was just like, because that machine's going to move with or without our words. But I think, you know, what we saw this weekend, you know, was certainly not, yeah, it wasn't a giant golden dump. It was more of a, you know, an Al Haymon movement than anything. You know, I think, you know, there's a reason, like, it's kind of, I think it's almost symbolic. Oscar, you know, people are going to have him under a microscope right now, De La Hoya, in terms of how he runs his company. And one, I heard that, you know,
a lot of people are expecting him to fail. You know what I mean? Well, there's a lot of people banking on him that want to see him fail. They don't want to see him, you know, kind of proceed in what he's been saying he's going to do. There's a lot of people out there that just to guess what Oscar has done, you know, kind of opened his eyes and seen what was going on with his company. And I'm pretty sure Schaefer's out there, and he's like, you know, Schaefer's thinking, hey, I'll give it another 6 months. We'll see what happens from here. But, I agree with you on that.
Right. And, well, I think, too, you know, so when people were outing this about, well, Oscar wasn't even at the card this last weekend, I think, you know, one, you know, he had his tournament that he was handling, I think, the next day or the day after. And then also, you know, I guess he had family issues that somebody was ill, like gravely ill, and so he had to take off. He wasn't at the card. I think, too, on some level, and I could be wrong, maybe all that other stuff is just the reason, but that it's somewhat symbolic in that he's not sitting ringside for a fight that's not really his. These are all Al Haymon guys. They're all facing soft touches for big money. And as much as, you know, Steven Espinosa seemed to want to throw Oscar a little bit under the bus, like, hey, he wasn't here. I wrote him a check to promote, but he's not here. I think he knows what time it is. I would hope that he does. And so I thought it was interesting. I mean, look at it. Those fights are just typical Al Haymon specials. I just don't blame Oscar or Eric Gomez for it. And again, it was kind of David Greischman's video. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, Dave, where he questions Eric Gomez. And Eric has this look on his face like, you know, like, I don't think it was I got away with it, so fuck off. I think it was more like, do you even really know who you're talking to or the situation? Like, I didn't make this fight. I know I'm Golden Boy's matchmaker, but what promoter or matchmaker for that company ever has control over an Al Haymon fighter, be it whoever's fronting for Al at the given time, whether it's Ludabella or anybody, Gary Shaw. It's always Al in control. I mean, look at this card. They just announced the Mayhem card. And you got dudes that are just barely getting a few weeks' notice to get ready for this card. That's not how Golden Boy has worked in the past. I think that speaks to Al, kind of keeping everybody on short notice. So it's to me, just to wrap this up, we were critical of the video, and I, you know,
it's
Robert
genius,
Palmer,
though. Exactly. But it's for himself. It's not for the fans, but for himself. What he's doing is he's basically holding hostage to the networks and whoever else is involved in the promotional group of keeping them at a distance, and then knowing that some of these fights are really not, they shouldn't even be on TV or they shouldn't be matchmake. What he's doing is he's given a time frame, and he's shrinking it all the way down so that when that time ends up, when the clock finally just, you know, sets out the alarm, the networks, honest, and everybody else, honestly, just don't care what fight's going to happen. They're going to take it because they're on now in crunch time. You know, they need to crush everything in. They need to squeeze everything in as possible, and that's what he did. Santana, John Molina, Humberto Soto. I mean, Santana and Molina are Haymon fighters. You know, don't get me wrong. Like, I love John Molina Jr. and stuff. Even Humberto Soto. But is that really, Gabriel, a pay-per-view worthy fight right there, or that shouldn't that be on Showtime or HBO right now? You know, Mickey Bay, why is he back on pay-per-view? You know, why isn't this guy not back on Showtime, you know, showcasing a fight? These are fights that are not the traditional pay-per-view platform. We're not seeing guys. Go ahead.
Well, and again, like a Leo Santa Cruz, if I'm a Showtime subscriber, I want to see that guy fight. but every time I have to see that guy fight, I got to pay a bunch of money, and he's on a pay-per-view.
Exactly.
His audience is actually kind of getting limited by this. That's one aspect of it for his career, but he's got the status of being on pay-per-views and hopefully being built into one is what he's probably thinking, but his exposure on the major networks, like he's so far removed from that free TV model where everybody gets to know him. You kind of wonder, like, what's the plan? I don't really understand it.
Let me just throw this in. Now, this is when numbers matter, not to the fans, but to the fighters. The fighters are the ones that should be asking for the pay-per-view numbers, not fans. We shouldn't honestly really care about what these numbers really are. These numbers, and then make a big old story about it. It's the fighters themselves, because this is when Leo Santa Cruz and everybody else have to start asking, hey, how many people are viewing me? How many fans am I gaining from this? Because there's got to be a point, you know, that I'm going to want my own. I'm going to want to be able to feature my own pay-per-view fight. That's the question that these fighters got to start asking. You know, I mean, look, we're in a sport, we're in any kind of business, any kind of politics, anything in life. You can't put all your trust on one person. You got to learn how to, you know, kind of take control and stuff like that. But anyways, go ahead, Gabe, what were you saying?
There was one kind of wrap-up, too, in just looking at the coverage, like you, and just kind of dovetailing on what you were saying about the pay-per-view numbers. You know, I don't want to be Captain Negative all the time, you know, and I would like to try to encourage the media to be more proactive. I would say that we're a very reactive press, you know. Things happen, and then we write about them. We don't, like when I was writing about anti-doping, like a lot of it was early on, I wasn't really writing about reforms. I was kind of writing about things that exist, systems that exist or systems that are being created, situations. And I was learning at the same time of what all these things, you know, were and what mattered. And so when I look at this, and Greitzman, who's actually, you know, a reporter for a living, he's one of the very few guys that actually does this in another realm and then writes about boxing and tries to bring that. And he did a very good job, very professional, asking questions. But at the same time, the larger play and the question I think that was missing was, you know, did you make these matches or did Al Haymon make these matches? How much power do you have when you're involved with an Al Haymon? So they kind of hammer the same thing, the same kind of intellectual argument. What do these guys do to deserve the fight? I think, one, you got to take deserve out of it because this is boxing and it's just business transactions. It's not – that's why I don't really have a lot of stock in the that ratings board, because it's just like dealing with reality by coming up with a fantasy. The ratings themselves, the actual ones, don't even really work the way they're supposed to work. They're very arbitrary.
Right.
They're about as arbitrary as a pound-for-pound list. So just to make it short and not get more complicated than I've been, you look at that pay-per-view video that Ness did. You look at Greitzman's video that he did. They're both kind of after the fact. One, you know, like you said, who cares really about the pay-per-view numbers? This is like a really big drop-off or like a record. Like, you know, Floyd's off deal is what it is, and it doesn't really matter to me. But, you know, those kind of bulldog styles and asking tough questions, again, like the matchmaking, kind of know the rest of the background, find out those things. But also, what good does it do after the checks are being passed out in the back room already? And by the back room, I mean like literally, you know, backstage in the locker room by the commission. It's all done. Like after the fight, like, you know, that's not really the time to be hard-hitting. Once the fight's done, what should be happening, I think, would be very proactive, would be to hit the commissions when the fights are made and be dogged. Not just one day I ask the commissioner or the guy that makes the fights, but if you don't get the right answer, and Rob Salka, it was very obvious, right? We knew it was going to happen. It was kind of like a sanctioned Gotti Gamache. And they should have been there. The reporters should have been there every day. Why is this fight still on? How is this fight justified? Make those dudes famous that are bending the rules and putting fighters in danger. That's what we tried to do down when we were trying to get Angulo out of jail or out of ICE detention, same thing. And we made sure that we found out who was directly responsible, who was closest to him that could make the release. This is my personal strategy, and make that dude famous. Make sure that his name is mentioned multiple times throughout the article, and that the pressure, every time you talk about the story, you mention that dude's name. And I'm not saying that's exactly what did it, but tactics like that did. Calling constantly did. And so I think that's really what it takes. And speaking as somebody that's – I actually don't think Keith Kaiser did this reform with the TE ratio. I wish somebody would call him. Or call the Nevada Commission and find this out. Although maybe I should follow up on it. I'm a bit in retirement now. But make these guys accountable for the things that they do, and do it not just around the – don't be beholden to the PR cycle, to what the publicists want, like, you know, fight article, you know, and your lead in, your lead out, maybe an interview. Like, get out of that box. Get out of that framework. And you know, that all that stuff's bread, meat and potatoes. That just does the work. You know, that's just paying your bills. But the stuff outside of that, the long interview or the long – not even investigations, but just following a thread, you know. I want to be the expert on judging in Michigan and just become that guy. And that probably leads to judging in other states, and all of a sudden you're that guy. And when a fight like, you know, the Bradley fight happens with Pacquiao and everybody's outraged, or, you know, some other, I think, more worthy fight happens, then you're that guy. And maybe you've educated people around you in your area, and there's several of you guys. And now you guys all know how judging works, and you're not, like, asking the people that you're trying to question how it all works, and then they can just keep, like, putting the wool over your eyes, but you know. And you know when they're bullshitting. And you can call them on it, and then you get to a next level of questioning. Then you're somewhere else. And that's where change can happen. So, you know, I totally went long on that. But I think it's valid. I think that's where people should head. And so while I think that while I'm critical of the way that Ness and Greishman did it or the timing of it, I think people should be heading in that direction. We need more of that, you know. And then it'll start happening before the fights and then at other times. And then you actually have a real media that holds people accountable, because that's our job, is to call truth to power. And because power unchecked goes all crazy. It gets corrupted.
So, true. Absolutely.
There you are.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's get down to the fights here. Danny Garcia, where does he go from here? I mean, what are they doing with him? What do you think? Let me ask you first. What do you think they're doing with him now? You know, they obviously thought that Mauricio Herrera was going to be a soft touch. They finally got, you know, Al Haymon and the crew finally got what they were looking for. But, I mean, were you impressed? Were you excited? Did you even think that that was going to happen? I did. I knew that was going to happen. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he did his job. I mean, back in the day, you know, if this was off TV and it was just like a non-title defense, you know, like it was, you know, just an off-brand weight, the whole thing, I think back in the day we wouldn't care as much. But because, you know, it's on Showtime and it should matter a little bit more. People are understandably upset, I think.
You know, I'm going to tell you this, dude.
I don't know. I'm confused by the weight.
I got to tell you this, though. Listen, this is what I got to say. I mean, I'm not terribly upset about it. Was the matchup terrible? Absolutely. But, you know, Danny Garcia did exactly what he was supposed to do, was get him out of there. With the Mauricio Herrera fight, there was a lot of not fans but media people that were bagging on that fight without really checking
right.
What Herrera's done in his career. So,
you
know,
yeah,
I said,
the people kind of count that one as one of his soft touches. And I'm like, one, did you see the fight? Because it didn't seem like a soft touch to me. But, you know, but two, like, yeah, Mauricio Herrera is a quality dude. How could you not treat him as such?
Yeah, exactly. I had another radio guy that was actually even tweeting me at one time saying, like, really, you really think that's a good match? Oh, come on, man. He's going to get knocked out. And I was like, have you watched Mauricio Herrera? Have you seen how this guy can take a big punch? And that's the thing, is that right away, because a guy that has no knockout power, you write him off. You think – it's just like with Chris Algieria. He's facing Manny Pacquiao. Everybody's writing him off already because it's on pay-per-view and he's facing Manny. They're like, oh, he's not going to last that long. He's not going to do very much. He's going to get knocked out really quick. I'm like, man, when's the last time you've seen Manny Pacquiao knock somebody out? You know, Manny needs guys that are actually in line or very well matched for himself. Right now, in my opinion, since he's been knocked out by Juanma Marquez, there's honestly a little bit of an ego there with Manny Pacquiao where he's like, you know what? I want to be the best. So now I don't want to fight guys that are over the hill, guys I'm supposed to beat, guys that have big names but shouldn't be long longer in the sport. Let me face undefeated guys. Let me face guys that actually are fresh.
Yeah.
And
like
that's
it.
The problem. Yeah, I love the fight. I think that's a great fight. In about 5 minutes, because I'm going to let Gabriel Montoya get his last thought into what we're talking about. We're going to start letting people in on the conversation. So if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. My voice is almost going out again. I can't believe that, man.
That's
I thought I was ready for
a little,
it.
A little more long-winded tonight. And I know that, you know, the boxing historian or whatever that guy's name is going to love that. Or Farseno, our friend who likes to bend the facts, who also tune in.
I don't get how many people support the boxing historian when he's a racist. I've had that guy call me a wetback, go back to Mexico, all you Mexicans to die. Everything you could think about, he said about Hispanics every single
Yikes.
Time. He doesn't play it out on Twitter, Facebook, or on his YouTube, but the guy's a racist. You know, I've never supported him. I'll never support the guy, when he's on YouTube, when we started off. The kid's a racist. You know, and then he tries to come off later on that he's not a racist anymore because he found God. I'm sorry, man. It doesn't happen. He said some pretty hard stuff when I was trying to have a conversation with the guy because he did not like you. Remember that? He didn't like you. But since I wouldn't agree with him, that's when he started calling me a wetback and all this other stuff. Go back to Mexico. Nobody cares what you say. You know, blah, blah, blah. You don't even belong in that country. I'm like, dude, what do you mean we don't belong in this country? Check your history. Anyways, hurry up.
Yeah,
I
was like,
now you
mean,
only got 3 minutes.
I've lived in California for my whole life. What do you mean go back to Mexico? I am in Mexico. It's warm.
Hey, you know
here.
What?
I wish Mexico would go back to Mexico.
Exactly.
Well, let me wrap up on the what's that on Garcia here. They got to make a choice. Is he a welterweight? It's kind of doing what Canelo's doing. It's like he's dipping his toe in the water, and kind of what Paul Williams did. And I thought it was a very passive way of dealing with a career, saying I could fight from 47 to 60, but you're kind of like staying at a nebulous weight. Instead of really just saying, I'm in this division, I'm now campaigning at 47, bring it. But again, these guys all signed up to be advised by one guy and be under one umbrella. And I think the umbrella hasn't been completely open. I don't think we know what the whole picture is, that is to say. So I'm excited to see what's next for this guy. You know, are they going to move him towards Keith Thurman? I mean, because you look at the pieces at 47, man, and it's a stacked division. You got Marquez, who's willing to be there. You got Pacquiao at the top of the WBO. Sean Porter's the IBF. And whoever wins that fight, the Kell Brook Porter fight, and we'll get that later. Whoever wins that fight, depending on how they win it, if it doesn't end all controversial in boxing, but like, you know, a good fight that has a definitive ending and a clear winner, that dude's the man, in my opinion, or one of, you know, the man that should be probably fighting Floyd Mayweather, who has the WBA and WBC titles. And the winner of that Maidana fight, which is going to be Floyd Mayweather, he's the man to beat, I think. Certainly, he's the money man. But then you've got, moving through the ranks, Amir Khan is there, who's always, say what you want about Amir Khan. Dude is brave. He goes in there, he mixes it up. He's got a chance to win. He's one of the
Very
fastest
brave.
Human beings I've ever seen. And he can be knocked out. Who doesn't like that? Kell Brook, Devin Alexander, solid. Robert Guerrero, solid. Keith Thurman's possibly special. And also fragile, but can knock you out. It's brutal. Not to mention you got Diego Chavez in there and Brandon Rios. Frankie Gavin, I don't know about all that. But still, that's, 15 guys down. The division is stacked. And so to have Danny Garcia kind of just hanging out nebulous, you add him into the mix, or even a Lucas Matisse who could move up at some point, things could get really amazing. But you've got Al Haymon who controls most of it. And so is it going to be? Is it going to benefit boxing? Is it for the glory of the sport and the delight of the fans? Or is it serving Al's big new machine? That's the thing. And is that good for boxing? I know it's good for the fighters. And if you're coming from an ex-fighter or you're a trainer, and you're coming from that perspective, I totally understand it, that the fighters should get paid more. And it shouldn't be – but it should have to be a road earned to get that title. You should have to have proven your mettle. You can't just, microwave it because it's fighting, man. And the highest levels that we used to enjoy, those guys – worked to get there. Maybe Sugar Ray Leonard had more of a truncated career. He doesn't have like the most fights in the world, but certainly he fought his contemporaries at their very best. You can't say that he waited out Tommy Hearns. They waited out till the fight was bigger and they were more experienced fighters, like 15 fights later or something like that between them. He just didn't do it like that. At least in the Heyman universe, it doesn't seem like it. And I agree with you about your assessment about Jacobs. I worry about him. He's not getting enough rounds. I mean, this was a good fight, but this shouldn't have been for a title.
No.
You know, this should
no
have
way,
been
no way.
That
no
fight
way
that was, yeah. What's that?
I said, no way in hell it should have been for a title. Okay, but let's put some fight fans on. We got, you know, we got a couple people on right now. So let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now. I'm leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? CT, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother. How you doing, CT?
Pretty good. And there's not really much for me to talk about. Last week, I think all three fights were, you know, mismatches. But if I could, I'd like to talk about Danny Garcia. If they're going to make a fight with him and Peterson, if they could as fighters, you know, for the respect of the division, try to make 140 as much as you could. I understand Garcia is a big dude, but, you know, if they could make 140, just to some fans, you know, if they can't make, they're one of the, you know, two of the best fighters at 140 to an extent, you know, give the fans what they want to see and see who's, you know, the best at 140. You know, Danny Garcia is obviously the best, but Peterson could make a point, you know what I mean? If they could try to make 140, because the catch weight, to me, it doesn't really, I don't really like catch weights. And, you know, if they're going to be at Garcia especially, if he's going to go up, if he wants to be a welterweight fighter, don't do a catch weight. Just go up to welterweight. And to me, I mean, we're going to see where he lays at 147, because obviously at 140, I know he's getting by on just his size alone and his strength. And he's going to deal with people who are the same size as him, if not bigger. So we'll see what he does at 147.
You know, here's the thing. I like the fight between Danny Garcia and Lamont Peterson. But you have one more guy that's right in between that, and that's Mauricio Herrera. You put that guy with either one of them, especially with Lamont Peterson, I honestly, truly believe you got a fight of the year right there between those two guys. One, because they both guys don't really carry a big, heavy punch, but they do throw volumes. They know how to adjust. It would be a chess match, but it would be one of those chess matches where there's a guy that's willing to sacrifice one of his pawns just to check you. And that fight's great. Danny's got some unfinished business out there. Either guy that he takes right now, I'm not really sure where Heyman and his crew are going to go with it. I'm not sure if they're going to try to go with another soft touch and try to get him out, you know, keep him there long enough. Because we got to remember, most people are expecting that Madonna's going to be taken out, because that's what happened to Luis Jose Castillo, and we're not really sure. I'm not one of them yet. I'm still kind of on the fence about it. You know, it's something that we can argue about, but Floyd needs names. And with Top Rank and Golden Boy still yet not have showed they're going to make a complete marriage, or they're going to have any type of cooperation, Floyd still needs some names out there to work with. Gabriel, what do you think?
Well, I think it's, you know, a lot can happen. A lot just depends on what Al decides. You know, that's really, to me, what it comes down to. But I think Danny, honestly, I'm not that interested in a Peterson-Garcia fight. I mean, I guess it could be fun. I mean, I just don't, I don't know. I think it could be a grind-out, kind of ugly fight in some senses. Some people think it's an instant action fight. I'm not sure I completely agree. It depends on how Danny wants to fight and what the sacrifice is doing to him. I think he should be at 47. I mean, we sat there in front of him at that con fight, and he just is a big kid, man. And he's a growing kid. He's hitting into his physical prime. Was he 26 at this point? So I think,
well,
you know.
I think with a boxing perspective, a boxing fan perspective, absolutely he needs to move up. But if I was managing him, I would say, you know what? No, let's wait. Let's hang tight. I know you're struggling with it, but let's just kind of see. Let these guys feed themselves up. Let them kind of, you know, just kind of, you know, fade out into the sunset. The rest of these welterweights out there. Because the welterweight division is starting to get really, really interesting. Because don't forget, he moves up to welterweight. He's got to face guys like Cal Brook, Sean Porter, Keith Thurman, who I think by far right now is the biggest and strongest welterweight out there right now. I can't think of another guy that you can think of right now that can say that has a one-punch knockout power, or just power in general, that can really just damage a guy, and is very athletic. You know, one time is one of those guys right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you match him up against a Matisse, who seems like he needs to set a little bit more or a lot more to get his punches off, That Danny can manage that. Keith Thurman, he's a potential like a Pacquiao type of guy because he can hit you on the fly. He can and hit you at odd angles, and he's kind of he can be flying through the air and still you know moving to the side and still land something that just rocks your world. I want to see him do it on the very top level. I still think you know the guy's just. He's got a lot of upside. To me, he's probably my favorite welterweight at this point, Keith Thurman. Just watching the way he works and the originality. Love the personality, too. He's just so, like, wide open, you know. With Garcia, I really think they're draining a kid unnecessarily at this point. I really think that's part of the problem. I mean, they had to bring him Rob Salka to get his confidence back says a lot. But then that he couldn't make the weight. I mean, it's not like... Okay, next time we're going to go about it some other way because it's probably already horrible what they're doing, you know, probably cutting water. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe they're doing the hot bath method, which I think is, from what I understand, probably the least amount of time moving
down
in
weight. You know what sucks for him?
Right.
You know what sucks for Danny right now is that if he leaves 140, he's running from Herrera. If he doesn't go to 147, he's avoiding the bigger guys that are there right now. They're very talented. Which way do you go? This kid has nowhere to go. He's cornered up right now. I don't know, CT, what do you think? You there, CT?
Well, I'm sorry. What was the question? I'm sorry.
I said he's cornered up right now. If he doesn't stay at 140, he's running from Herrera. If he doesn't go to 147, well, he's got a lot of big guys up there that are very talented right now that he can possibly not rein in. Anything he might, there's a strong possibility he's not one of the A factors in that game.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely has some unfinished business with Herrera, and it's almost like he's unsure about really going up to that welterweight division because he sees what's stacked up there. I think he, you know, he's confident in his ability, but he knows, you know, there's going to be guys that are around his size, strength, if not bigger and stronger, faster, he's going to have trouble with. If I could, can I speak on the Brook and the Porter fight for a minute?
Go for it.
I'm going with Porter in this fight. I think mainly because Brook hasn't fought the same level opposition. Not to say that Alexander and Malinowski are like the top level, but Porter's been fighting better opposition. I think Porter's going to deal with a different type of power in this fight that he hasn't felt in his career yet. But the way Kell Brook fights with his European style, with his head too much in the air, and all I could think about is the Carson Jones fight, the first fight, and Porter fights with more tenacity, a little bit more speed and power. And I see Porter getting Kell Brook out of there in ninth, 10th round.
I like that, brother. All right, CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother.
Thank you.
Let's go with area code 714. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
All right, I'm going to quote the great Gabe Montoya. The next guy that Al Haymon develops to superstardom will be his first. I think that's by design. I feel like it's by design. Like Al Haymon's planning something down the road where developing superstars isn't really a priority. It's more developing a bunch of guys that are kind of at like a star level that can fight each other here and there. And I think you guys have suggested it before, more like a league model.
Yeah. That's what it looks like. I mean, and look at the way it operates, and you compare
it. Well, how did he start off?
I know a lot
of
boxing fans. No, I think it's developed into it, though, and I think it's – maybe it's just a long, slow burn, you know. It seemed to be like after that New York Times article came out, it was like they quoted him as saying if I wanted to take over boxing, you know, I could do it overnight. And it was like they called his bluff, and he just went, screw it. I heard that article got kind of messed with and edited down from what it really was. Due to some of Al's influence. And I kind of wonder about it. I remember there's an Oscar coming out with that one interview where he kind of, you know, stated that he kind of wanted to do that. That, you know, absolutely, why wouldn't we want to own it all? But you look at the way it works now and the short notice fights, you compare it to the UFC, who I think Richard was very enamored with. And you know, and I think even Oscar is to some extent. I mean, it's a hell of a business model they're doing. But more pay-per-views, more often, like you said, like a bunch of guys. Like, they don't need one guy to lead the pack. They want them all to have legitimacy, so you buy them all.
I think also another thing that's kind of coming into play is it just looks like he's playing out some of these promotional deals that some of his guys have with these other promoters, and he's just making fights to meet the quotas and the promotional deals, run them out, and then do something else with them.
It's going to be Mayweather. He's going to be the Black Oscar. You know, it's basically, I mean, that's what they've been doing. He's the last big pay-per-view star, or the latest big pay-per-view star. He's got name recognition across HBO and Showtime, and they're, you know, free affiliate, quote-unquote. So, you know, the branding is there. Now, if you pull them all under Mayweather Promotions, quote-unquote, and Al is the business mastermind that Floyd gives it up to after every victory and before every speech. So, you know, what we're going to see is what we just saw happening over at Showtime, you know, when Richard was still with Golden Boy. But we're just going to see it, I don't know, but both networks or maybe on some other platform, you know. I guess he signed a bunch of, you know, dates on NBC, so we'll be seeing some of it there. But I think you're absolutely right. He's running out of the string. And it's just boxing. It's funny because it doesn't want that national commission that Teddy Atlas talks about. It doesn't want government oversight. It doesn't want rules like other leagues. And now it's coming home to roost in Al Haymon taking over boxing.
Let's go. Let's move on. Let's go on with another guy. Let's go
Thanks
with
for the call,
area.
Man.
Yeah, let's go with area code 714. Here on Leaving the Ring Radio. What's on your mind? 714, you're on live right now.
That was me again, I think.
Are you there? Okay. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay? Let me go with 787. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
The Riddler.
Yo, this is Danny Garcia's number one hater.
The Riddler unleashed.
Yo, I swear my heart rate cannot
take
another Danny Garcia win.
You know you were wearing the mask. Come on, hey, be real. You were wearing the mask, and when the music came out, when Jada Kiss came out, you were wearing the mask, and you were like hopping up and down.
I lost all respect for Jada Kiss. I lost all respect for Jada Kiss. He lost his New York City credibility after that.
Wow.
Yo,
I kind of thought the purge reference from Garcia though was kind of appropriate because that's kind of what Al is doing with the fight, the
wow.
way the caller brought up. You know, he's getting
one
more
going
fight
on that week.
You know, based
sure.
on all
yeah.
of that,
Stewart was doing the purge.
Hey, based on what happened, the purge said they're going to do another part three with Danny Garcia as a star.
Oh my
so
God!
Wow.
What's that?
Can we make this like a real film, like, you know, where like the entire world tries to kill Danny Garcia? But
I don't understand why people hate. You know, you can't hate the player; you got to hate the game. You know, Danny is doing what any fighter would want to do. I'm content
with a Danny Garcia loss or his father being banned from boxing. One of those things has to happen in the next year.
Like his dad, man.
Do.
I like
do you, has a trainer
can't
upset
speak
the
English
public
anymore.
This much? I mean, would you say Stoney, John Ruiz's trainer, did he upset people more than Angel Garcia
yeah.
or less?
No, I think the last person to really cause this much hate in boxing as a trainer was Panama Lewis. That's the last person I think caused this much hate in boxing.
Yeah, but that
I
wasn't
think...
after throughout history.
That was,
in,
but that was also,
now.
You know, an act, you know, a terrible act, as opposed to an ongoing act, if you will, where it's just like daily acrimony, you know, upsetting people interview by interview. I don't know if Panama had like an abrasive personality. He was just made some terrible choices as a trainer. But I kind of like Angel. Dave, when we sat and talked with him in
I really liked Angel, to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you why I liked Angel. Right. I'm going to tell you why I liked Angel.
I think he's a good personality for boxing. He's a good villain. Boxing always needs a villain. He's a good personality. I just can't stand what they're doing with Danny's career. I just feel like every fight with Danny Garcia is irrelevant, and it's weightless. I feel like there's no importance to his fights at all. I don't know what type of legacy he's building. He's a paper champion, like he's the closest thing to being a paper champion you can get without being like a bootleg paper champion. Like,
I
just don't
see
anything.
I don't know.
I don't think he's the Matisse fight's a real fight. I think his whole resume up to that fight is real, and what's happened since then has been, you know, winning the lottery and then just totally losing it. You know, yeah. That, I mean, it's like they didn't make the strong move towards like a big capper fight. Like maybe, you know, do Peterson
now.
Where
yeah,
they did
now.
Pereira, right? You know, like they should have just done Peterson or move up to 47. But like everything else, like Herrera, why are you fighting Mauricio Herrera in Puerto Rico? Like what the hell were they thinking? You know, and they just blew it. And you know, it was already tough for people to take a Rican from Philly, East Coast, a bit of a piece of experience, and it can be a little abrasive, you know? And so I think it turns people off, and then the dad doing all the talking. But Danny's always seemed like a really honest, hardworking dude, and his dad seems always very real. But I think when you're in the Owl Factory and you're continuing to have things go your way, you just go along with the program, and why wouldn't you, you know?
Well, Gabe, let me tell you this really quick. I saw, and this is, you know what, that's great that you brought that up, because I actually saw this on social media. I can't remember. I think it was either Twitter or Facebook. But somebody mentioned, how does Fernando Vargas get a pass when he didn't even speak really not a whole lot of Spanish at the time? You know, he kind of learned through the whole process of his career, but he wasn't really Spanish-speaking that much. You know, I knew people back in the day that were criticizing him when he spoke Spanish. But it was, I think that what the Heyman people were looking at was like, as long as this guy keeps knocking out people and doing what he's supposed to do, people are going to love him. And they banked on that. I think they kind of looked at that model. You know, Fernando Vargas was just a vicious guy. He was going out there and he was destroying people and stuff like that. So they were kind of hoping that was going to be the same type of thing. And it just didn't happen. You know, there was going to be acceptance. Even though Fernando Vargas was not born in Mexico, that finally, because the whole thing was that, well, if you're not born in Mexico, you're not Mexican. You're not going to be accepted. And he was. He was actually accepted. You know, he was very accepted from them.
I was actually going to talk about Porter really quick and the Brook thing, but to answer that, to get on that, what you just brought up about Vargas real quick, I always, like, me and my friends always talk about that, and I feel like a lot of Fernando Vargas's acceptance with Mexicans and Latinos had to do with the fact that a lot of Mexicans and Latinos did not like Oscar De La Hoya.
I believe that. Yeah. I agree with that
wholeheartedly. Yeah. Myself included, I was not an Oscar guy, although I just didn't. He didn't strike me as genuine, and I got to be honest, you know, he just seemed canned. And I was wondering, as we were talking, like, when did he start doing the dual interview? Did he always do that, or was it like when Top Rank picked him up, where he would do the English interview and then for my Mexican fans out there, and then he would talk in Spanish and give them their message? And, you know, and honestly, I'm one of those Mexicans that's very Americanized, and I don't speak much Spanish. I understand probably better than I speak, and you know, it's a long story. But to me, I think that you're exactly right that Mexicans, it's kind of like that self hatred thing too. Though I think that this country has kind of done to minorities, you know, blacks and Mexicans and poor people, to make them feel bad about themselves, and then they kind of turn on each other when one of them starts to do well. And Oscar is one of those guys that isn't your traditional what a Mexican should be like. He speaks well, and he's a good-looking dude. He has almost kind of Anglo features, like more Spanish features than kind of like the Indian-Mexican features. And so there's a little bit of that kind of haterism. I remember the people were pissed that he moved, like, up to, like, Montebello from East L.A. Like, you know, like that's, like, such a huge lateral move. You know,
Gabe,
move.
I don't know about that. I mean, look at Canelo. You know what I mean? I mean, here's a guy that has nothing, no feature of a Mexican, but automatically he's accepted. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It kind of varies out.
He's a white guy. He's accepted because he looks like a white guy, and I wonder what that is. Why are we so fascinated by the dude that he's a white guy? Is that, if he looked like any other Mexican and fought the way that he does, nobody would give a shit.
I think Rob Riddle is going to be accepted
because Rob Riddle looks like a Mark Anthony. He's going to be accepted as soon as he turns pro.
Wow.
You've never seen him? Hey, you got to follow him on Instagram. This kid looks exactly like Mark Anthony, man. He's just thicker.
Yeah.
He's a thicker guy, you know what I mean? Because, you know, Mark Anthony's like
that's
a toothpick
hilarious.
And stuff. You can...
But, yeah, let me go anorexic real quick, and then I'll get my Mark Anthony on.
That is funny.
But, yeah, like, I was going to say, like, Kell Brook actually, you know, the Europeans are kind of the same, especially the British. they kind of take what they can get with their fighters. They don't really discriminate. I mean, Calzaghe was the only person, I think, who the UK didn't really get along with because he was Welsh. But
he's
they'll
Welsh,
take
yeah.
Lennox Lewis. They'll take Kell Brook. They'll take Nassim Hamed. They'll take Amir Khan. They'll take what they can get. But what I was going to say about Kell Brook was I like Kell Brook a lot. And before I get in, I want to say I like Kell Brook a lot. But Kell Brook is going to get the brakes beat off him Saturday night. He leaves his hands out there for too long.
Hearing that.
His
yeah,
last fight, he got rocked by that guy, Vasilio Shomarenko, whatever the heck that guy's name is. He got rocked by him. I wasn't impressed in that fight at all. I just see a lot of his hands being left out there. He leaves his left arm down really low. He's flat-footed. He just doesn't really have anything. I don't see anything special. I see a really good jab. But once again, he leaves his hands out there really long. And I just think that Sean Porter is just a whole different type of fighter that he's never fought before. Sean Porter, most likely, I can say, has fought a Kell Brook
before. Is Sean
Porter
going to be
blind?
Are they going to put a blindfold for him for this fight?
Oh, he's the Jedi. He's the Jedi. He thinks he thinks he's auditioning for Star Wars.
He's
Yoda.
Definitely in the zone, man. That one day that I got to see him, and I got to see him a couple days, but the second time, and it was just like a couple weeks ago, and he sparred, and I felt bad. I couldn't believe the kid that he was fighting. The kid was big, like 175. I think he fought at like 65, but that means he's probably like 75 to 80. And he's tall, and he was just killing this kid's ribs, double left hooks to the ribs, and then coming upstairs. And then
that's
why
it's unbelievable that he's saying, what's his name, your boy. God, I can't even think of his name right now.
Forsenno?
No. No.
Oh, Porter?
No, Porter.
Yo, Porter's dad versus Garcia's dad? Let's get that popping right now. Let's get that popping.
I like about Porter's dad is
God.
That he's calling out every other trainer out there right now. But, no, Porter put down, oh, my God, I just went blank right now. I can't believe.
Well,
One of Gabriel Montoya's favorite fighters in the whole wide world.
James Kirkland?
Malinowski?
Oh, James
Kirkland.
Yeah.
Yeah, he put down. That's why it's believable. That if he did this, I mean, Porter's dad keeps telling me. I mean, that day we were sitting down next to him. I mean, he was like, listen, my son is strong. None of you guys want to believe it. None of you guys want to look at it. He's strong. He was knocking guys down that was 160, 175 pounds. He's strong. And you know, when we put up that video about Malinowski, after that, where he said his son is strong, there's a lot of people on YouTube are like, oh, man, get out of here. He's on something because he's with Victor Conte. He's this and that. But if you kind of, like, watch what the kid has done and you look at him, he's pretty strong. He's kind of smart about what he does, though, you know?
Didn't he fight in the amateurs at 154?
Yeah.
Didn't he fight a light middleweight
down.
Or a middleweight?
That's the thing that they used to fight at I think it was 65 in the amateurs. And
yeah,
they've come down in the pros from 54 to 47. And slowly but surely, you know, over fights, you know, like 150, 151, you know, like that, or 151, 150. And
it's like Timothy Bradley. Remember Timothy Bradley was fighting at 152 as an amateur as well, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of boiling down. And you look at his body. I mean, he's ex-running back, for one. And he was carrying a lot more weight in high school. But I'm watching this Brook versus Carson Jones, too. Brook, though, is a guy, if he can get you on the end of his power, you know, because he's got that really nice jab, and it's very smooth. He's very relaxed in that.
Very smooth.
His problem is he does not have much of an inside game. So I think that jab is key, you know, and if Sean... The thing with Sean is he can give different looks. He can get in that boxing posture, and then he gets real small and compact inside his guard like a running back and can get slip past your jab, and then he's inside you and he's working your ribs. And his inside game, his ability to get around you and kind of manhandle you, he's much more physical than I think Brook, who got away with a hold and hit, you know, in this round, which is ridiculous, is used to. And so I think that's going to be key, the inside, who moves who back in that first clinch. Can Sean spin him around and manhandle him? Or is Kell going to be able to get away from him and push his head down? when they get inside. I think those are going to be big things. How it's officiated is going to be big. My guess is the ref, you know, I don't know who the ref is. I'm hoping it's Jack Reese.
Hey, guys, before I get out of here, I wanted to ask you on the topic of the fight. I wanted to make a note. Kell Brooks comes in very dry in fights for some reason. He doesn't look like he warms up at all. But I wanted to ask you guys a question. Oh, and by the way, I got Sean Porter by knockout in like four rounds. But what is cutting weight? If you can make the weight, is a really big fighter. Like obviously, Sean Porter is really big for his weight. He can, you know, like you said, he's knocked down Kirkland. He's fought at over 150 plus, 160 plus in the amateurs. Is cutting weight like that cheating?
Wait. Say it again.
Good, I guess.
If you're cutting dramatic amounts of weight, like you know, let's say in the amateurs, you're like a Marvin Hagler. Marvin Hagler used to fight, I think he fought at light heavyweight in the amateurs.
Light heavyweight, yeah. Right.
And he fought middleweight. Yeah. Is that cheating to a certain extent?
You know what? It's funny that you said that. If you remember, Rob, I did a whole video about that back in the days when people were calling like Tito Trinidad a cheater, Oscar De La Hoya cheater. Look, guys, they look for advantages. To this day right now, athletes still look for advantages, okay? So back in those days, you know, guys were looking at advantage by cutting weight, be the bigger man. 5'11", dudes, think about it. 5'11", be 135, that's crazy. There's nobody walking around at 135 being 5'11", you know? These guys wouldn't be
like
great. Yeah, exactly. So now guys are finding other things in the sport to try to be great, which is called PEDs. We're just catching on to it a little bit more. You know, the thing with the weight issue is that it wasn't something where they're going to harm the opponent. It was more or less, it was harming themselves, and we didn't want to pay attention to it because we saw greatness from these guys. You know?
Yeah.
So that's when you hear like a Margaret Goodman come on the show and she talks about weight, you know, the weight was, you know, giving them more water in their brain, you know, doing this and that. We didn't pay attention to that because the fact is that they were winning. There were bigger guys that the fact that they were coming in at 135 and blowing up to 150, 156, 160, and they were knocking out guys that were actually trying to make that weight. So we didn't care because we were glorifying it. We were like, well, our guy's winning. But then when they decided to go to their actual weight or above, they looked normal. And I did a whole YouTube video about that one time. You know, I talked about the weights.
But yeah, I remember.
It was Paul Williams. Remember that? Paul Williams. Everybody's calling Paul Williams a cheater. Paul Williams this and that. And I was like, guys, wait a minute. This is throughout history. We've seen this throughout history.
That was back when you had the Chavez flag, right? You had the Mexican Chavez flag thing in the background?
Exactly.
You still got that, right? Yeah.
I still got it right behind me right now, at the side of me right now. And you know, so people just, like, you know, we're picking now at certain things. But when it comes down to PEDs, see, that's the funny thing, is that nobody wants to look at that. Nobody wants to look at that, but they don't want to look at the advantages of weight. Weight was a big thing. You could really damage a guy. And there was a few people that did look at it. It was a fighter, actually, Gamache. When he got knocked out by Arturo Gatti, then people started saying, oh, man, this is bad. This is bad. But this has been happening out throughout history.
So, wait.
Yeah,
so
no. It's okay. The Garcia Salca looked like a Gatti Gamache, but it was... you know, it wasn't really, you know, widely accepted by the press. I mean, everybody was outraged, and we did talk about it. Certainly on Twitter, you saw a lot of chatter about it. But again, you know, the New York should have been embarrassed into turning the fight away. And that's one of the things, you know, when people talk about the National Commission or Teddy Atlas talks about it, that's one of the things, like drug testing is another, where you take it out of, you know, the State Commission makes money off the fight happening in their jurisdiction. So they're not going to – if a fight's coming there, you know, because of a site fee or whatever, you know, given by Staples or Barclays Center or what have you, their job is to not screw up the deal, you know, in some sense. Make sure they provide, you know, the officials and get everything all straight for the fight to happen and for them to make some damn money. So, you know, guys don't want to set the bar really high. And they want to let the promoter kind of decide things. And I think a fight like this, you know, where you look at it and say, well, Al's going to be pouring a bunch of money in. And maybe, you know, maybe the Barclays get some other, you know, perk, some other act to go through here because Al's getting the fighters through. Maybe somebody else that Al has. When you start looking at it like that, I mean, it's who's really looking out for the fighters? No one, you know. And so you've got to kind of put a firewall up, sort of like, you know, the promoters are the ones that are paying the judges. So you're going to be deferring towards the lead promoter. You're not going to get called. You're going to get turned away and be out of the scene pretty soon. So you need that another firewall there. There's not enough of them. And I think that's why you saw this fight. Is that, you know, there's not enough pressure on the commission to say no to it. So they're not really going to outright turn this down. If this is what Al's serving up, and if the guy doesn't look too much like a dead guy, then everybody's going to go with it. And that's what happened.
Let's let two more callers in really quick before we end the show. Here, let's go with the area code.
The 111. He's been there for a while.
111. What's up? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Area code 111. Are you there? Hello? Oh,
okay. I can oversee his Skype number. No? All right.
Area code 7. No. Let's go with area code 724. You there? You're on live right now, leave the ring. What's up, brother?
Yeah,
what's on your mind?
I think you guys are onto something with this Danny thing because I thought that, like, basically, L was just giving these guys soft fights until the whole Mayweather promotion thing gets together. But I don't. There's nothing there for him at 140. And if he moves up, he's going to get destroyed. So I think it's on to something with that. And do you guys know anything what's going on with the Mayweather situation?
Situation?
How do you mean?
Well,
you mean for the under? You talking about the undercard?
Just like the whole promotion thing, the whole promotion Mayweather promotion type deal. Because I've seen them guys getting licenses or whatever. So I just.
Oh well, yeah. At this point, I mean, he's licensed in Vegas and New York
and
Washington. Yeah, and so, I mean, I think we're just seeing the beginnings right now. I mean, I would expect by the next pay-per-view that it's all independent of Golden Boy. They'll have nothing to do with it this next time out, whatever it is, you know, next May. I think that's what he was alluding to. I got a surprise for you guys next May. It'll be, I think, the unfurling of a lot of things in the spring, you know, or post, you know, coming out of it and heading into summer next year. Where, you know, we see maybe with the promotions, I think we'll see what Al's got up his sleeve by then as well, you know, in terms of the league.
I think it has to do with what you know, like main events backed out of the whole lawsuit, you know, with Kovalev with Bernard Hopkins because of that fight there. And we're going to find out a lot. We're going to find out what's going to really be, who's going to have the stance, who's going to decide to say, you know what, let me I'm going to stand my ground, and I'm going to continue this war. So that's Al Heyman. I mean, take it or not, you don't like the guy, you may not like what he does, but he's a smart dude. He knows how to maneuver his, you know, his moves. He knows what to do exactly when he needs to get done. And it leaves everybody wondering, okay, what's the next move? And that's the great part about the guy. Love him or hate him, I mean, the guy's doing what he wants to do in the sport, which is pretty sad because the sport is pretty much, it's always open field, whatever you want to do.
Thank you. Yep.
All right, brother. Anyways, we got this weekend over here on, let me see. Hold on, we got one more call. Let's just take one more call, Gabriel.
You got it.
951, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 951, you're on live.
No, I just called in. What y'all talking about? Porter fight?
Absolutely, brother. All right, we'll put you back on hold, okay?
Go ahead. Peace.
Peace.
All right, Gabriel. Who do you got, man, for the Porter fight? And what do you think?
I like...
I like Porter in this fight, but I think it's, you know, to me this is a fight that is going to show the mettle of both guys, you know, and it's going to be, it's a measuring stick of who they really are. Is, you know, Sean Porter the real deal? Or, you know, did he get, is Devin Alexander really that good? I think it's a solid win. You know, I think the Pauly Malignaggi, what did he have left? I mean, it's a guy that was always kind of talking about, seemed to be talking about retirement the last few fights. And you know, getting probably some good paydays out the door, but versus a young, hungry guy. Those are two very different places to be when you're fighting for titles. You know, and so I think the fight showed that. He went right through him. Sean seems to be a guy that's kind of peaking. Kell Brook is a very good fighter. We're going to find out how durable he is, how strong he is. I think the fight's going to come down to conditioning and physical strength. The ability to get to the body is going to be huge. I think Kell's more of a sharpshooter to the head. He's not a killer body puncher. So if Sean can avoid the head shots and get to that body, I think he's got a good chance of breaking down Brook and stopping him late. I'm taking Porter by a unanimous decision, though, because I think Kell's got you know, true grit, and he's full of the real stuff. And so he's going to be there every step of the way. I think it's going to be a barn burner, man. It's a StubHub Center. But I got Porter by decision.
You know, I like Kell Brook a lot, man. I think the jab is one of the key factors there for himself. I think that if he can stick to it and he cannot get exhausted, because you know what? A lot of people, folks always think that, you know what, the jab is something that, you can be thrown. You have to have authority. You have to have timing. And you got to got eye coordination and stuff. So I don't know how much he can do of it. So when it comes down to that, I look at Sean Porter, who's looks great. A guy that looks determined. A guy that can throw bounds of punches. I'm not sure if he can knock out Kell Brook, though. That I'm just not buying right now. I think that he can throw a lot of punches. I think that he can dominate, but knock him out. I think we all fell in love with the whole Paul Malignaggi, but even though Paul, you know, we've never seen him get stopped like that, but we have to put in the fact of age. Kell Brook's not that old, you know, so we got to look into that. So I'm going with Sean Porter by the decision. And hey, really quick, man, because my uncle, my great uncle who passed away, you know, Ned Romayor, I want to say, hey, I love you. We all love you. This is a trying time for a lot of us here that are all Romayor Duenas. And, yeah, I'm getting a lot of texts. I'm sorry, man. I'm getting a lot of texts from my cousins. He just passed away just yesterday. So it's a tough time for us, you know. So right now I'm getting told by the funeral, where, you know, the whole works and stuff like that. So, but everybody, you know what? It was great. Just, you know, we're going to have a great weekend this week, I hope, for fights.
Yeah, I think it's going to be special this weekend, man. I think all the fights are going to be very good. You know, just looking at this whole card, you know, Porter, Brook, Figueroa versus Estrada. I think Estrada's a candidate for upset special. I'm pretty leaning towards him in this fight in some respects, just because of I've just questioned Figueroa's work ethic. So I won't be surprised if Estrada comes away with it. I expect Darrell to beat Bika in the rematch, but I don't expect it to be like a barn burner. I don't know. Rough and tumble is what I expect.
I don't know, man. Is it that one I got to disagree on? I don't know. You know, I mean, I think he did everything he could for that first match. What else can he – I mean, I don't know. You know, I think Psycho Bika, I think we all underestimate him. I don't know. I'm going with Bika for that one right there. But anyways, guys, I got to go, man. Everybody have a great week. Man. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Gable, talk to
Peace.
You.
Peace. All right. Peace.